Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
This past February, I opened for a comedian at the Queen Elizabeth Theater, also here in Toronto. And right after it, I went back to the green room and I got really emotional because I was in complete disbelief that the person who had begged his professors to exempt him from presenting in class was now willingly doing stand-up comedy in front of 1,000 people in a theater. It just seemed so absurdly fulfilling.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this, you're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Jose, welcome to The Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me. And just a quick note for the benefit of the listeners, I stutter. Your internet connection is fine.
Well, again, I am absolutely thrilled to have you here. I was introduced to you by way of our mutual friend, Akira Chan, who has been a steady referral source for incredible people. But before we get into your personal story, I wanted to start by asking, where in the world did you grow up and what impact did where you grew up end up having on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Sure. So I grew up in Lebanon in the Middle East. I was over there until the age of 18. I then moved to Montreal for university, and I stayed in Canada since, with a few brief stints in Manhattan and Mexico City in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And what impact did growing up in the culture there have on the choices you've made? Like what parts of, coming to North America did you find to be shocking? And growing up, what kind of advice do are Lebanese parents, like Indian parents, do they just tell you go become, doctors, lawyers, and engineers?
That's a great question. It definitely can be the case with certain parents. I think it depends if you come from a family with a lot of doctors or engineers, there might be more pressure than if you come from a family with in other industries. In my case, most people in my family were in business, so it wasn't blasphemous at all for me to end up choosing business and psychology at McGill. In terms of what it was like going from that culture to North America, I believe I really wanted to move, in part due to dealing with a stutter in a society that might scrutinize those that are a bit different a bit more. So even though I've always had a big group of friends and relatives that I loved. It was not always easy growing up different, especially in the Middle East. So I think when the opportunity to study abroad was presented, I proactively made it happen, and I moved. And I'll share one interesting insight about the move is quite often it's easy to expect that just because we've moved to a new environment that our previous challenges were miraculously vanished. I was proved wrong. I moved here and the same challenges of stuttering and the resulting severe social anxiety just reproduced itself here, and that essentially set it up for what I ended up experiencing in the past 3 years as a journey.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things I wonder is, you know, in the school system in Lebanon, while you're growing up, what was the sort of, you know, stigma from teachers and reactions from teachers? Like, how did they deal with you in school? You know, and how did you navigate this dynamic as a child? You know, like, what was it like as a child growing up to have to deal with this?
I believe it was a confusing experience to some extent, because unlike, say, a liberal-leaning school in the West, where diversity and inclusion can be preached and inclusiveness implemented by the educators over there, especially maybe a couple of decades ago when I was in school, if you were different, it was more of a taboo, so to speak. And I remember this one time I had to recite poetry in class, and I had really worked hard on memorizing it to make sure I managed to do a half decent job in spite of the stuttering. And by the way, my stutter was way worse before. I since learned a breathing technique to control it. And I recalled I recited the poem. I felt great about it. And then when the teacher was sharing feedback with the students, she said, Jose, maybe you can go a bit faster next time. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. So one thing I wonder, you know, when your parents first found out about this, and I know this from, you know, sort of, you know, dealing with Indian parents, because I remember, you know, I ironically, despite being an author now in fourth grade, I was failing reading. And, wow. You know, Indian parents basically are like, kid, you know, failing anything is ridiculous. And I like, you know, you know, she brought my, you know, parents over, and she said, your son is failing reading. Have you considered the possibility that he has a learning disability? And Indian parents don't believe there's, you know, their kids have learning disabilities. They just believe they have shitty teachers. And so they're like, no, fuck you. Like, my son doesn't have a learning disability. And I wonder, you know, one, do you know what the actual cause of this is? And did you find that, you know, particularly, you know, when you're in Lebanon, where you're not accepted for being different, were there people trying to fix this in any way? I'm just curious, like what your experience was there about trying, you know, like overcoming it. Did you work with speech therapists? Like, how did you deal with it there?
Sure. And I think it's interesting that your journey of struggling with reading and then becoming a writer, I think is quite similar in some ways to the one that I'll share a bit later about how I turned stuttering into something else. But for now, I'll answer this question my mother did take me to a lot of speech therapists in Lebanon. So since childhood until my teenage years, I did go to speech therapists in Lebanon. So this was something that was actively being worked on. I even went to a psychologist at some point when I was 16, I think, or 17, to talk about stuttering from a more psychological standpoint. It's initially stuttering is based on neurology. It's something that happens in the brain, but of course, because it is related to speaking, which is a crucial aspect of human behavior and connection and communication, obviously an issue with speaking will result in, or it can result in, social anxiety and feeling isolated and so on.
This is just out of morbid curiosity. So, you know, you mentioned that it's a neurological thing. I was curious, like, does it affect any of your other motor skills in any way? Like, are you slow to write? Are you like when you're reading or anything? Or is it just, does it only play out when you speak?
It is actually only speaking related. I'm sure in certain cases it might coexist with other issues, but in my case it has mainly affected speaking.
Well, let's talk about the social anxiety component, because I think that the interesting thing to me is that there are probably people listening to this who don't have anywhere near the challenges that you do that also feel, you know, some level of social anxiety, particularly now because of you know, like the whole COVID situation. Like, one of my best friends called me the other day and he's literally walked up to 10,000 people on the streets and talked to them. He's my former business partner, has been a podcast guest. And even he said that it was awkward for him to want to go and start a conversation with somebody because he hadn't for so long. But what I wonder is, you know, early on, how did this impact your ability to make friends? And you know, how did you deal with that dynamic? Because kids are awful to each other. I don't know, you know, what they're like in Lebanon, but, you know, teenagers and little kids are actually really mean. And I can only imagine, you know, with a stutter, you know, like navigating that dynamic. So how did this affect your friendships while you were growing up?
Absolutely. It's a two-part answer. On the one hand, I am grateful to have had a big group of friends my entire life. I'm still close with them, even though we all live in different countries around the world now. The second part, though, to that answer is whenever it came to talking to people outside of that group of friends, I struggled significantly. My go-to behavior was avoiding people, avoiding speaking, and just staying as quiet as possible so that this secret would not come out. I was really controlled by the fear of judgment, of what would they say if they hear me stutter. And quite often it was not in my head. I did face negative reactions to my stuttering. So I believe I was trying to protect myself, knowing what could happen if I did put myself out there. Silence and avoiding appeared to be the winning and the safest strategy for me, even though it was safest in the short term and the most dangerous in the long term.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow. So, you know, the other thing I wonder is that, you know, like how do you get to the point of acceptance with friends? Like, did it get to a point where you just had to tell them this, that, hey, this is, you know, part of the deal in terms of hanging out with me? And then, you know, with those friends, like, you know, like what are the positives that came out of those friendships? You know, because I'd imagine like for somebody to actually, you know, accept you in this way, they'd have to be one, open-minded, and two, incredibly patient as a person, and like basically look past the surface and see who you are, not based on this condition, but who you are as a person.
Yeah, you know, I never thought of it that way before. That's a very accurate analysis. I've sometimes joked that stuttering is like a filter that allows you to weed out the people who should probably not be in your life, because, as you said, it does require certain qualities to look past a superficial detail. I would say, in terms of my good friends, the main way in which it affected things was that I simply was not talkative most of the time. And it wasn't until I went to the UK to learn this breathing technique to control the stutter. That was a big first step, both in terms of learning a technique to have better control, and also in terms of starting the self-acceptance journey. Self-acceptance did not come overnight. In fact, even after I had gone on that program to learn the technique and such, it still took me many years to really accept that I am different and to express myself openly, interact with the world, even though some of the reactions I would get would be negative ones or ones that might discourage a lot of people from ever wanting to interact again.
So, you know, you mentioned that the self-acceptance journey didn't happen overnight. And I think that, you know, all of us on some level have things that we feel self-conscious about, that we think are different about us in some way or another. I think that that's true whether you're, you know, in your 20s or in your 60s. You know, what do you say to the person who is having trouble, you know, with self-acceptance based on something they believe is different or flawed about themselves?
That's a great question. And in fact, in my TEDx talk, one of the things I say is everyone has a stutter. It's that thing that might hold you back, that might prevent you from fulfilling your true potential on earth. And one philosophy that I've applied on my own journey, there's two quotes that encapsulate this philosophy quite well. First one is by Robert Frost, and it's, "The best way out is through." And that's a philosophy I've really applied through doing stand-up comedy and other fear-defying endeavors. The second quote is from Stoic philosophy, and it's the impediment to action advances action. The obstacle that once stood in the way becomes the way. And I believe that's a great mindset to have for anyone who deals with an insecurity or a fear or a challenge. Instead of looking at it as a roadblock, we can look at it as a compass that will tell us what we need to do on our journey towards self-actualization and growth.
Wow. So when you get to college in the United States, I'd imagine, as most kids do, you have given some thought to, you know, this whole idea of, you know, what it is that you wanted to be when you grew up. And I wonder, like, what, you know, what are the potential career choices that actually you thought of before you ended up doing what you're doing, which we will get into, but like, what career choices did you think were not realistic? What career choices did you think were the ones that you were going to end up in?
That's a great question. Because my whole life, my whole life had revolved around engineering a lifestyle with as little speaking as possible. In fact, when I was in my second year of university at McGill in Montreal, I went to speak to all of my professors, and I asked them to exempt me from all of my presentations. And any class that had a certain part of the grade depending on in class participation, I would ask these professors to give me additional homework in lieu of ever having to speak up in the classroom. So I really, in my mind, I was envisioning a career based on either little or no speaking at all. And it might explain why the first industry I got into was research oriented. That did sound very appealing to someone who did not want to speak ever.
So I'd imagine that, you know, because I remember seeing the TEDx talk and you talked about, you know, meeting this girl at a party, and the thought that came to my mind is like, what is this like for your dating life? Like, what is it like when you're, you know, attempting to form relationships? And this just is another curious question. What is the funniest thing you remember from the first social interaction you had with a complete stranger?
So in terms of how it goes, In the whole dating world, I would say in the past, when I was always trying to hide who I am and the fact that I stutter, I would say it did not go well because I was afraid of expressing myself. I allowed the stutter to severely affect my self-confidence, which obviously is not ideal for dating. It wasn't until I really started to accept who I was, embrace the stutter, and even at times make jokes about it, that I was able to really shift how I interacted both within the dating world and in general with people as well. In terms of a funny social interaction, so there are some that were not funny in the moment that we can laugh about now, or there are ones that I intentionally would joke with my listener, and it would be a funny moment. Which type of
either one, whichever you choose. I think the one that would be funny in the moment. Let's hear one of those.
Yeah. So I remember I was at the gym about a year ago, and after a workout I started talking to the manager at the gym. He said hello to me, and obviously he noticed I was speaking differently, and more specifically that I was taking a deep breath every few words. So he interpreted that as being a gym related issue. So he said, "Are you okay, man? You sound like you're really out of breath." And then I said, "Yeah, I don't know what happened. I was doing this exercise, and now I'm really struggling, and I even seem to have developed a stutter in the past few minutes." And then he really freaked out, and I said, "No, man, I'm joking. That's how I always speak." and then he was like, "You bastard." Yeah, it was a very funny moment.
Okay, so I want to talk about the career choice that you've made, which to me is beyond fascinating. You have a stutter, and you basically choose a career in which you become a speaker and a comedian. That's like a 4'4" person deciding that they want to go to the NBA. Of all the things you could possibly do, it's one of those things that you'd be like, wow, anybody else would tell you, okay, that sounds insane. Maybe you should consider something else. So what led you to actually do this?
Yeah. So, and by the way, another example besides the NBA one is someone struggling with someone struggling with reading who became a writer. So I find,
yeah,
I would say it's not that I always wanted to be a speaker and a comedian, and I was able to do it in spite of stuttering. It's really the other way around. I was terrified of speaking, and thus I became a speaker and a comedian, one fear-defying action at a time. It was not engineered or systematically planned at all. It was me deciding to do one thing I was afraid of, and then that led to another and another, and it kept on evolving from joining the debating club in my last year of university to then winning public speaking competitions 3 years ago, which then led to me doing TEDx talk, and I then spoke at some events, both in Toronto, like the Arc Angel Summit, and then I was booked to do a lot of keynotes about things like overcoming adversity and diversity and inclusion at HR conferences, at sales or finance conferences and schools and so on. And then with the comedy, I would say the comedy was a major tipping point on my journey because it really taught me to use humor as a mechanism to embrace and address an insecurity and make it public. And I think the first time I shared a video of me doing stand-up on Facebook, it felt like it felt like a huge step for me as someone who spent his whole life trying to hide his stutter to just openly and publicly joke about something that for so long held me back was extremely liberating. And it did represent, I believe, the first big step on the journey I went on in the past 3 years.
Wow. What was it like the first time you ever got out on a stage in front of an audience? Describe that experience to me.
The first and the last. The last, as in before lockdown, they all have been terrifying. The main thing that has changed is my relationship with the fear. In the past, fear would act as a stopping agent, whereas more recently it's turned into a catalyst. But if I have to speak about that first time I did stand up, I was absolutely terrified. And right before it was my turn to go up, I asked myself, what the heck are you doing here? And in fact, I've asked myself this question before a lot of performances, so it wasn't just the first time. the fear would definitely persist. And it definitely, like, before every massive milestone, I would still get that feeling of the first time. I remember when I spoke, for example, at the Archangel Summit event in Toronto, it was in front of almost 3,000 people. And before I got on stage, I remember feeling absolutely terrified. It's a good thing I meditate. And then another one that is similar is this past February, I opened for a comedian at the Queen Elizabeth Theater, also here in Toronto. And right after it, I went back to the green room and I got really emotional because I was in complete disbelief that the person who had begged his professors to exempt him from presenting in class was now willingly doing stand-up comedy in front of a 1,000 people in a theater. It just seemed so absurdly fulfilling.
Wow. So do you feel that same feeling when you're in a situation like the one we're in right now, when you're having a conversation with me, knowing, like, you know, like the thing is that with a podcast, and I appreciated that you prefaced it for our listeners, I was saying there's nothing wrong with your internet, but like, do you encounter that same, you know, sort of fear when you're having a conversation like the one you're having with me, knowing the fact that, like, you know, literally it's your voice that is your tool to communicate on a podcast?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say a bit less so for a few reasons, one of which is that I know that this podcast is self-improvement oriented, so it's aligned with my values and with my journey, and also a big aspect of the fear with stuttering comes from people's reactions and that whole aspect. So I would say maybe a podcast conversation, while still a challenge for me as someone who stutters, it wouldn't be the same as me doing stand-up comedy or me doing a keynote, as far as the adrenaline and the fear are concerned.
Wow. You know, one thing we didn't really talk very much about is your relationship with your family. Like, I wonder, you know, over the course of your life and as you've come to sort of accept yourself in this way, how has it changed your relationship with your family?
It's interesting. I would say I've always had close ties with my family, be it my sister who lives in the UK, or my parents and the rest of the family who live in Lebanon, but also I also have relatives in the States, in Europe, and in Canada. I would say with my immediate family, maybe it has allowed me to express myself more, and to enjoy, I suppose, conversation a lot more, but with my relatives, though, I would say it has had a big impact, because as far as they were concerned, I was always the super quiet cousin or nephew who would never speak. So it was just assumed that I was extremely shy and extremely quiet. So having gone on this journey and having transformed how I view myself and how I interact with the world, this has, of course, transformed my relationship with them for the better. It has given it a lot more depth, and they've all been super supportive. For example, my mom's cousin and his wife, who are from New York, they came to see my TEDx talk. They drove to Ontario to come see it. So it was really great having them there. Yeah.
Wow. So one final question. So I have two final questions mm-hmm. for you. You know, a lot of parents are listening to this, and, you know, some of them might have kids who have, you know, similar issues or you know, issues that those kids feel an immense amount of insecurity about, or feel the same way that you did, have, you know, anxiety about. What would you say to those parents about talking to their kids about this?
It's a tough one. I think here's how I see this question. If I could go back in time right now and share a few messages with my teenage self, I would tell him that it's okay to be different. That's a very big one. I was so obsessed with trying to fit in and just not wanting to accept that, hey, I am different and I will probably always be different. And it's important to embrace and own what makes us unique, as opposed to shying away from it or to feel embarrassed about it. I would also say that humor can be a strong mechanism for someone to just bring up what it is that they are insecure about, so that everyone can just address the elephant in the room at first, and then people can move on right away, as opposed to that thing turning into an obstacle that prevents effective connections with the world. I know, for example, that when I was a younger guy who stuttered, so much pain and shame and fear would have been resolved had I just started my social interactions by saying, by the way, guys, I have a stutter, or even making a joke about it, as I have through my stand-up, like, hey guys, I have a stutter, so really, if you had any plans in the next 48 hours, cancel them all. So such jokes play, or have played in my case, a very key purpose of owning what makes me unique, addressing it right away with confidence in order to move on from that hurdle and focus on having enjoyable and mutually beneficial interactions with the world. And lastly, I would say that one last thing that those parents can be mindful of is that it's a good thing to encourage the children to do things that are uncomfortable. I know that in my case, even though my mom had mentioned a few times that there was this kid in the school who had done some theater to work on his stutter, I know that where I was at that point in life, I was never going to consider it. But maybe had she nudged me a bit stronger to do it, who knows? Maybe it would have accelerated my self-development journey and saved me from having a lot of negative days in the future. So really, I would say it is good to own what makes us unique and to do the things that we are afraid of, even though they will feel quite uncomfortable.
Amazing. Well, I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Could you define your perception of the word unmistakable?
Absolutely. I define unmistakable as something that is so unique and distinctive that nobody else could do it other than you.
Okay. To me, it seems as though the more self-expression we engage in, the more unmistakable we become, just because we are naturally and statistically unique. if we convey this existing uniqueness through extreme self-expression, we are bound to get closer and closer to the quality of being unmistakable, a lot more so than if we are trying to hide who we are, and if we are acting in ways that, in more standard or generic ways, that we believe will allow us to conform or to fit in more efficiently. So I would say, when we focus on extreme self-expression, even if it means having to fit out instead of fitting in, I believe we get a lot closer to that unmistakability.
Amazing. Well, I can see why Akira referred you to us. This has been really, heartwarming and phenomenal. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything else that you're up to?
First of all, thanks again for having me on. And people can find me on Instagram at YesWayJoze, JOZE, or JOZE if you're American. I do have a bunch of things on Instagram, including the trailer of the movie currently being made about my journey. And with the same name, you can also find me on other platforms like LinkedIn and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The Four Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.